So let's start with a question for you, our listener. Are you the person everyone else relies on?
The one who's always, keeping all the plates spinning.
Exactly. The default solution finder, the one who just shows up and stays strong. If that sounds like you, then this deep dive is, well, it's probably essential.
Mm-hmm. Because you're used to being resilient, you handle stress, or at least you used to.
Right. On the outside, you might even still look completely calm, totally successful. But inwardly, you've probably noticed this profound shift. And it's disturbing.
It is. It's the silent paradox of the person who's always so capable. And the research we're looking at today really zeroes in on this very specific kind of internal collapse. We have to go beyond just saying, I'm tired.
Oh, it's so much more than tired.
So much more. It's this emotional, mental, and physical depletion that's caused by prolonged pressure. And the key thing here is that it's an exhaustion that no amount of rest, not even a vacation, seems to fix.
That's the core of it, isn't it? It's not a lack of sleep. We're talking about these chronic symptoms, like a really short fuse or that persistent brain fog.
Yeah, where every simple task feels impossibly heavy.
Yes. And you start losing interest in the things that used to ground you, the things that brought you energy. You feel like you're running on fumes, but you're just trapped on a treadmill.
And that is precisely when that old companion, your anxiety, decides to turn the volume up to 10.
So loud it's paralyzing. It's this flood of uneasy thoughts, this physical tension you can feel in your shoulders and your stomach.
And a mind that just will not shut off at night.
Absolutely. And the irony is you try to handle it like any other problem. You tell yourself, I just need to push through this week, or I should be able to handle this. Why am I struggling?
But those rationalizations, they're based on this idea that your system is just working normally and it just needs a little refueling.
Yeah.
Our mission today is to really unpack why that familiar self-talk is failing you. We're looking at the critical collision between that persistent driving anxiety and the chronic crushing burnout. It's not a personal failure. It's a physical pattern that needs to be broken.
Okay, let's unpack that collision point because I think it really defines the struggle.
Yeah.
We know burnout is this emotional and physical depletion, right? It comes from just constantly being the responsible one.
Absolutely. Burnout is the state of having completely emptied the tank.
Hmm.
And then you layer anxiety right on top of it.
Right.
And anxiety is that engine, that voice demanding you refill the tank immediately or else disaster will strike. It's that constant prediction of failure or disappointment.
So the two forces are in, like, direct conflict. You have anxiety acting as the accelerator, screaming, hustle, perform, don't let anyone down.
While burnout is the complete brake slam, your body has nothing left, so performance inevitably drops and every task becomes so much harder.
And the really awful result is that the capable person you used to be can't meet the demands of that anxious mind, so you just instinctively leap to self-blame.
Yes. You see it as a character flaw, not a predictable, debilitating pattern of exhaustion.
So what's happening biologically? Tell us more about the mechanism behind this.
This is, I think, the most crucial insight from the sources. It's not primarily psychological, it is physiological.
It's in the body.
It's in the body. You are not weak. Your body is simply communicating its profound distress. Your nervous system has accumulated what we call a tremendous allostatic load. It's the wear and tear on the body from chronic stress.
So that system that's designed to keep us safe in short bursts, the fight or flight response, it's just been running nonstop.
Exactly. For months, maybe even years, you've been in sympathetic nervous system dominance. The system has been protecting you by prioritizing alertness, hypervigilance, quick responses.
And the deep irony.
The deep irony is that when your body is locked in that survival mode for too long, the true state of calm doesn't just feel elusive, it actually starts to feel foreign. Or dangerous. Or lazy. And that internal wiring makes that self-diagnosis trap, oh, we just need a weekend off, so powerful, because the brain literally doesn't know how to step out of emergency status.
That reframes the problem completely. The goal isn't to try harder. It's to help the nervous system realize it's safe to stand down.
That's it. And that realization, supported by the research, is why just hoping to bounce back is failing. If the system is wired for danger, it cannot start recovery on its own. This is where external support, like therapy, becomes so essential.
So therapy here isn't about being fixed. It's more about creating this protected, judgment-free space to just pause and allow the system to breathe.
Yes. It's a space where you can start looking beneath the surface without that pressure to just push through. And what's fascinating here is that the targeted support we're talking about doesn't just treat the fatigue, it addresses the underlying nervous system wiring directly.
Okay.
The approach isn't vague. The sources we looked at detail a four-pillared structure for regaining stability.
I appreciate that structure, but I can already hear the listener thinking. When you're this depleted, the idea of adding four new things can feel overwhelming.
That's a powerful and necessary question.
How do we make sure these are seen as recovery tools and not just four more things to fail at?
The key is that they're not tasks. They are shifts in perspective. It's about internal tuning. We start really small by prioritizing internal awareness over external achievement.
All right, let's start with pillar one, building awareness and self-compassion. How does a person who is habitually hard on themselves even begin to generate compassion?
So the first step isn't feeling better. It's observing better. The goal here is specific awareness. We want to shift that internal interrogation from why can't I handle this to what is this feeling telling me about my limits right now?
So instead of thinking I am a failure, you learn to observe my body's experiencing depletion and my mind is running catastrophic thoughts.
Precisely. It creates psychological distance. You start to understand why rest doesn't feel restful. It's because the body is still vigilant. You recognize the immediate signs that your nervous system is flashing red. And that realization, that's the foundation of compassion. You're not failing. Your system has just been carrying too much for too long.
Okay, once that awareness is there, we move to pillar two.
Yeah.
Supporting your nervous system. But again, when you have zero energy, where do you find the motivation for breathwork and grounding? It just sounds like another thing on the to-do list.
It does, but the energy investment is minimal for a really immediate return. We're targeting the physiological route. So to get a little technical, the goal is to specifically stimulate the vagus nerve.
Okay.
The vagus nerve is the main highway connecting the brain and the gut, and it's what activates the parasympathetic rest and digest system.
So we're basically manually flipping the system from panic mode into rest mode.
Yes, exactly. And the strategies are focused on what's called vagal toning. This isn't just generic deep breathing. It's often about slow, extended exhalation. So breathing out for longer than you breathe in, that specific action signals safety to the brain.
And what about the actual workload?
Yeah.
Because if you just keep pushing at the same speed, the system will just crash again.
And that's where identifying your triggers becomes vital. This pillar includes something called radical pacing. We encourage you to use the little energy you do have for only the most vital things, and you have to strategically reduce the internal pressure by radically reducing self-criticism.
Okay.
The core action is learning to tune into your needs before your body hits total collapse, instead of just ignoring them until you're forced to stop.
That makes so much sense. It's a shift from passive rest to active, targeted regulation. So then pillar three is clarifying what matters to you. Burnout is often described as an identity crisis, isn't it?
It really is. The person you had to be, the high achiever, the reliable one, has completely taken over your authentic self.
And this pillar is about addressing that.
Yes. It's about unhooking your fundamental self-worth from your external productivity. The sources really emphasize that you have to actively define your identity outside of what you achieve.
But how do you actually do that? It sounds a little abstract.
Well, it starts by identifying the shoulds versus the wants, we ask. What are the values you truly hold, like creativity or connection or curiosity, that have been sacrificed because your only perceived value was being useful?
Right.
It involves setting boundaries based on those newly discovered needs. This phase is about reconnecting with peace, genuine joy, and just presence, and actively moving away from the person you felt you should be.
It must feel terrifying to set those boundaries, especially if you're afraid of disappointing people who rely on you.
It is terrifying. And that leads us seamlessly into the final pillar, because recovery is impossible if you do it in isolation.
Pillar four, rebuilding healthy connection. We know anxiety and burnout are isolating. They build a wall, not because you don't care, but because every single interaction feels like a new overwhelming demand.
Exactly. The brain calculates that isolating is safer than risking more energy drain or perceived failure in a social setting. This pillar is about teaching the skills to dismantle that fear. It's about practicing what we could call radical vulnerability.
How did that look in practice?
You start small. You communicate your needs clearly. You make specific, small requests for help instead of waiting until you're at a crisis point.
I imagine learning to ask for support must be incredibly difficult for someone who has always been the supporter.
It is. It requires a lot of practice in releasing that fear of feeling like you are too much or incapable. The goal isn't just to be around people, it's to strengthen the relationships where you feel genuinely seen and safe. The outcome is realizing that you don't have to carry the entire burden alone. Connection can actually be a source of safety.
So this entire process through these four pillars is about systematically retraining your nervous system and really reshaping your identity. The sources we looked at are clear that you can reclaim emotional steadiness, mental clarity, and that restored energy.
You regain the capacity for presence and pleasure in just everyday moments. You reclaim the ability to rest deeply without that crippling guilt or the constant hum of anxiety. Your confidence, your foundational sense of self, it's restored.
The ultimate insight here, which I think elevates this whole discussion, is that this isn't about a quick fix. It's about helping your nervous system breathe again and meticulously rebuilding a life that honors your humanity, not just your productivity.
Absolutely. You deserve a life where you feel grounded, capable, and whole. The deep dive shows that the focus isn't just on learning to survive this exhausting cycle. The true transformative goal, once your system is regulated, is learning how to truly live.
So as you think about all this, challenge yourself with this question. What does living actually mean for you when you feel truly grounded, capable, and whole? What does existence look like when you're not perpetually carrying the weight of the world, but are just able to exist and enjoy simply being?